Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Signal-Reed, and our guest this week, Vicky Delaney. Each week at this time, we visit with authors, poets, editors, publishers, or anyone connected with the writing world in our region. We hope to find out a little bit more about their creative lives, what inspires them to write, and give them an opportunity to read from their work. This week, we're very pleased to welcome Vicky Delaney. Welcome, Vicky.
Thank you very much, ladies. Thank you very much for having me.
Vicky Delaney is one of Canada's most prolific and varied crime writers, author of the Constable Molly Smith series from Poison Pen Press, the newest of which is Unreasonable Doubt, and the year-round Christmas mysteries from Penguin Random House. Under the pen name of Eva Gates, she is the national U.S. best-selling author of the Lighthouse Library Cozy series from Penguin Random House, set in a historic lighthouse on the Outer Banks of North Carolina. The third book in the series, Reading Up a Storm, is released on April the 5th this year. Vicky lives in Prince Edward County, and she's the current president of the Crime Writers of Canada. Since we interviewed you last on this program, Vicky, you've adopted a new persona of Eva Gates.
That's right.
And started two new series. First of all, please tell us why you chose that name and about the series.
Happy to. The Eva Gates books, Eva Gates writes the Lighthouse Library series. And that's slightly different how that came about, because that's what's called in the publishing world a work for hire, meaning that I was approached by my agent, who was approached by the publisher, who were looking for someone to write a series for which they already had an idea. So essentially, they gave me the idea. They gave me the setting, some of the characters, a very loose outline of the plot. I mean, I knew that it was to be a cozy book, so that indicates the style that they wanted and all that. And then let it go from there, and I took it from there. So because it's a work for hire, they own the copyright. The only thing different between that and any other standard publishing contract is that they actually own the copyright, so I do not. So they could theoretically hire someone else to write more books in the series, and that person would also be under the name of Eva Gates. So I don't know if most of your listeners know this, but, for example, Carolyn Keene, who writes Nancy Drew, and is it Franklin W. Dixon, who writes The Hardy Boys, those were work for hire. I think there was once a Carolyn Keene, but all the other subsequent writers just used that name. So it's not uncommon. It's not common, but it's not uncommon.
Did you choose Eva Gates?
Well, it was a little bit of a back and forth. It was an interesting exercise to find a name that is easy to spell, easy to pronounce, can be, is memorable, not monosyllabic, and that hasn't been used anywhere in the writing world before. So we came up with Eva Gates. Eva was my grandmother, so I was happy to choose that.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
Gates has no significance to me at all.
So do you also write the year-round Christmas mysteries as Eva Gates?
No, the year-round Christmas mysteries are under my own name of Vicky Delaney, because that was my idea and I approached them with that idea. And the nice thing about the work for hire is essentially it got my foot in the door at Penguin Random House, so that after I had written the first Lighthouse Library book for them and they liked it, then they were, open to seeing more things from me. So
Nice. Why do you write in so many different subgenres, cozies and mysteries and crime?
Essentially, I think I just like mixing it all up a little bit. I like the Molly Smith books that you mentioned. There's a new one of those just out, Unreasonable Doubt, a little bit on the edgier side. The standard police procedural, a little bit of an edge, as I said. I also write standalone novels of suspense, somewhat edgier still in a psychological sense. And the cozies are just light and funny. So what I found that I like is basically just mixing it all up, a little bit of here, a little bit there, and changing mood and tone. Keeps me interested, I guess. I have 23 published books so far, and maybe that's part of the reason why, because I am able to keep myself interested by changing things a little bit.
Yeah, going into different rooms in your head.
That's right, yes.
For our listeners, what is a cozy?
Okay, a cozy is actually essentially that. It's a cozy read. Usually it involves an amateur sleuth. It's intended to be very light. I guess that's the first definition of a cozy. It's a light read. It's a mystery novel. It's light. Sometimes they're funny, not always. It involves an amateur sleuth of some sort and her community. The community is extremely important in a cozy, that essentially you have a network of friends or relatives. There's always a certain amount of eccentricity among some of the characters. And I kind of find it almost like real life writ a little bit larger. The dotty neighbor is dottier. The nosy neighbor is nosier. The complaining neighbor is more complaining than you actually have in your real life. The usual definition is that they have no sex or violence, but I think it goes a lot further than that. Yeah. I think the tone of it is never heavy. Yes, we're dealing with a murder and nobody's laughing about that. But the tone of the book as a whole is light. You don't have any sense of impending doom.
Yeah. So we sort of think of Murder, She Wrote. Or
Murder, She Wrote is an excellent example.
Or Miss Marple or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So what do you find appealing? You're an edgy writer otherwise, so what do you find appealing about being gentle?
I'm actually enjoying writing the cozies a lot now, and I never thought that I would. But I think after a number of books that dealt with the darker side of humanity, and I mean, I didn't go into serial killer stuff or anything like that, but the sort of the more personal tragedies. In one of the Constable Molly Smith books, she says to Sergeant John Winder something about, when I decided to become police officer, I knew I'd face the darker side of life with, you know, raped women, abused children, murder victims, people in traffic accidents. But that's not the hard part, is it? The hard part is the sheer tragedy of some people's lives. And the thing is, with writing the cozies, I'm away from that now. You know, other than the dead guy on the floor, these people don't have sheer tragedies in their life. They tend to have fairly nice lives. And, you know, maybe I've put my time in writing about tragedy and about the darker side. But then again, I'll come back to it as well someday.
Well, we'd love to hear you read. So which one are you going to read from?
Well, we've been talking about Reading Up a Storm, so why don't I read from that? Okay. I'm going to start from chapter 2. One of the things I always tell my creative writing students when I teach classes is, in a mystery novel, you start at the absolute latest point, what's called the inciting incident, the point from which everything else flows. And this is a difference between a cozy and perhaps another style of book, that a cozy needs to start on the tone where the characters are all introduced, you want to meet all the characters again in their setting and that sort of thing. And it's not to start on a dark tone because it's a light book. So a rule overall, of course, is that you begin the book in the style in which it intends to continue. So chapter one is all about a party that they had at the library, which is in the lighthouse in the Outer Banks. So I'll be referring a little bit as I read to the success of the party. But the party is now over, and Lucy Richardson, who's our protagonist, she's the librarian who works at the Body Island Lighthouse Library, and she lives in a little tiny apartment up on the fourth floor. So she is relaxing after the party. And incidentally, the party had broke up a little bit early because big storms started to move in, and because the lighthouse is, as it is in real life, 10 miles outside of town, everybody sort of thought they needed to get back early. Okay. The warm glow from the success of the party, not to mention the attentions of two highly desirable men, lingered, and I let out a contented sigh, happy with my world and my new life on the Outer Banks. The heavy draperies were pulled back and the deep black of the night was broken only when the great First Order Fresnel lens high above me burst on in the 2.5 seconds on, 2.5 seconds off, 2.5 seconds on, and 22.5 seconds off pattern it would maintain throughout the night. On nights like this, I truly came to understand the power and importance of a lighthouse. It must be bad enough to be out at sea on a dark and stormy night with modern satellite guidance systems and the entire eastern seaboard lit up. But in the days when the only glow from shore might be the dim and dirty light of a tallow candle or the dying flames from a damp cook fire, I shivered in delight and turned back to my book. Charles had moved off the bed and was now purring softly on my lap in the comfy pillow-covered window alcove tucked into the 4-foot-thick stone walls. I was reading Kidnapped by Robert Louis Stevenson in preparation for the next meeting of my classic novel reading group. By coincidence, I was at the part where the Brig Covenant, bearing the kidnapped young David Balfour and the rescued Jacobite hero Alan Breck Stewart, is about to be destroyed on the storm-tossed rocks off the western isles of Scotland. I stroked Charles' fur, and he rolled over with a contented stretch. Poor David had been tossed into the cold sea and had barely managed to stagger onto the deserted shore, more dead than alive, when I again looked out the window. To the north, the lights of Nag's Head were a yellow smudge on the horizon. But where this stretch of the coast ran along the Cape Hatteras National Seashore, all was as dark as could be. No car lights lit up the strip of highway, and nothing moved out at sea. Ships had headed for safer waters long ago. The light above me went into its 22.5-second dormancy, and I was about to turn my attention back to the book when a white flash caught my eye. I grabbed my binoculars. I love to sit here watching the activity out at sea. Gray battleships, huge tankers, mammoth cruise ships, luxury yachts, commercial and sport fishing boats, and sailboats of varying sizes all passed by my lighthouse area. Tonight, however, I wouldn't have expected any activity, certainly not close to shore. I adjusted the glasses and scanned the black void that I knew was the sea. There it was again. A light rolled and jerked as if being tossed by the waves. I estimated that it couldn't have been more than 20 or 30 yards offshore. From this distance, it was impossible to tell if the light was attached to a boat. It might have been on a dinghy that had come loose from its moorings and drifted away. As I began to lower the binoculars, and again intending to return to my book, another light caught my attention. This one, I estimated, was on shore. It was followed by a second light, and then two more until there were four lights, maybe 20 feet apart. They bobbed up and down, but I was pretty sure they were on the beach, not in the water. At first I thought of campfires and bonfires, but the rain was relentless. No open fire would last long, and no sensible person would want to be sitting around in it in any event. It couldn't be a camper, because that beach was for day use only. I wasn't sure what I was seeing. My eyes were having trouble focusing through the binoculars, alternating between the pitch dark of the storm and the sudden flash of light from the 1,000-watt bulb above me. As I watched, the light on the water began to approach the lights on the shore. It had to be a boat. It was moving against the force of the wind. I leapt to my feet and grabbed a flashlight. I ran out the door and dashed up the twisting iron stairs. Two flights up, another window faced out to sea. I was higher, but the view wasn't any better. I pressed against the window, binoculars in place. I hadn't shut my apartment door behind me, and Charles leaped onto the window ledge. He stood on his back legs and pawed at the glass. "I can't see anything," I said to him. Opaque sheets of rain blew across my line of sight. As I tried to peer around the raindrops, a calm spot blew in and I could see. The light was dripping and weaving, there one second, gone the next, as waves tossed it about. It had almost reached the shore and was heading straight for the four bobbing lights. Those lights looked exactly like boats resting comfortably in harbor, but no harbor was there.
Ooh. Well, thank you, Vicky.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Vicky Delaney and her new series under the name of Eva Gates, and we'll chat some more after this short break.